We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome, everybody, to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast / live stream. Jeff Erickson here with my good buddy Joe Sheehan from the Joe Sheehan Newsletter. Hopefully, you can join us and you're enjoying baseball on this Wednesday night. If you're a Mets fan and you're probably not enjoying this night, which is just awful news. Just left with a shoulder injury, soreness in his shoulder, nebulous term. We'll see what it means later on. As I said, my guest here is Joe Sheehan. We are sponsored by WynnBET. If you are allowed to bet in your state, the great state of New Jersey, for instance, or New York, you can bet online at WynnBET.com, W-Y-N-N, for those of you who are not already familiar with the company, but we thank them for their sponsorship. Joe, thank you so much for joining me. How you doing?
Psyched to be here, Jeff. I know I've come on the podcast a few times a year, but I've never actually done it like this on the video. So as you can see, I'm all fancy behind me here. So happy to be here. You mentioned Jersey. I'm actually in Jersey. Inspired by the Gaming Golf Boys, Jen Stone, and Erickson. Cross the river to see what I can see this weekend down at Torrey Pines.
That's fantastic. We'll get your golf bets at the end of the podcast. Remind me on that there. So then I can build my DraftKings lineups afterwards. And get
in the opposite of what I, yeah.
Oh, no. I'll listen to you. I mean, Joe's in the longstanding RotoWire Fantasy Golf League. It's RotoWire and Friends, really. And we've been doing this for 22 years, and you're killing me this year. You got Spieth, so you're destroying. Yeah. You're doing well. I have DJ, and I am not doing well as a relate. But, okay, enough golf talk for now. Let's talk baseball. Let's talk the news of the day. Jacob DeGrom struck out 8 of the first nine players he faced, 3 perfect innings. The SNY broadcast was talking. Oh, he doesn't seem happy. He doesn't look right. He's taking a longer period of time. He looks uncomfortable. Sure enough, straight to the dugout or the clubhouse after ending the third inning. They take him out, and now it's and he's out of the game. Sean Reed Foley's in. He's been dealing with soreness earlier. Had a DL IL trip earlier. I said a DL IL, but you know, you guys know. This is scary stuff.
You know, I don't know whether to be relieved that, one, it's not the elbow, and two, it's something different from the oblique, or really worried because it's the shoulder. The shoulder is something, you know, as good as we've gotten at repairing elbows, a shoulder can be a lot more, have a lot more long-term ramifications. I remember writing about DeGrom in the offseason, and I had him 14th on my top 100, which got a lot of pushback. And I said, you know, if you look at him in 18, 19, and 20, there was always something, some kind of nagging injury that I thought would chip away at the workload. It feels like, you know, he hasn't blown out his elbow like so many guys have, but it's always been something. And maybe it just feels like the forces that he puts on that body are always taking out something. Obviously, the performance is still there. He literally was on his way to, you know, the 24 strikeout perfect game tonight before he left. So I think we'll all be holding our breaths, not just from a fantasy standpoint. Obviously, we're focused on that. But this is one of the great runs in pitching history. And if it ends with him giving up 6 runs in 2 2/3, that's one thing. But for it to possibly end like this is really, really bad.
Yeah, it is. And it's in light of just a terrible week for pitching. Obviously, we saw the news on, you know, the announcement on Monday about baseball cracking down on substances on the ball, foreign substances on the ball. You wrote a good newsletter on that one earlier in the week. In addition, the other thing you talked about is, you know, we're going to be tracking all the offensive numbers here and the big jump. And people use June 21st as the demarcation point. And that's not necessarily the right demarcation point because, first of all, they kind of gave the pitchers the lowdown. Hey, we're going to be enforcing things, so you better start changing now, right? But also, offense heats up in the summertime. You did a really good article talking about how you're using previous years, OPS Plus, comparing the jump from April and May to June then versus April and May now, and going back not just 2019 but other years too.
Yeah, you go back to 2016, and you find that you get, you know, about 8 points on average from April, May up to June. And, you know, it looks a little bit like a bell curve in most years, kind of maybe a little bit shifted towards the back end. But offense is lowest in April and September, cold weather and mostly being the factor, and highest in June and August. So we'll see how this plays out. But if you go back to the start of the week, there was a lot of this. Well, you know, you go back, if you draw a line at the date that MLB made a stink about this and talking about offense going up. So I really wanted to provide a baseline to say, hey, look, we expect offense to rise. And what we want, what we're looking for is how much does it rise relative to that jump in other years? But also, Jeff, I think we want to look at the components. You know, I've talked a lot about the performance of the baseball this year. Rob Arthur at Baseball Prospectus has talked about how it isn't flying as far, even though it's being hit harder than it's ever been hit before. So I think we've got to be careful to not just say, oh, offense is up. That means, you know, this is all happening. Or even not get too caught up in spin rate changes, because those numbers do bounce around a little bit. You know, Saris had a good piece of The Athletic kind of talking about this stuff this week. There's always a desire to get on the story and do the analysis and be the first out there. I think we're going to want to all tap the brakes on this.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that's really a good point, and I agree with you on that. And then there's there's a lot of tapping the brakes going on. Tyler Glasnow has obviously been the other huge issue this week. Amazing season, awful news. He is outright saying that this emphasis on the substances on the ball and taking away from that midseason helped cause his injury. I can see it, but at the same time, it's hard to say, you know, say it's not all that, you know, I don't know for sure. I mean, this is a guy who hasn't thrown a ton of innings in the past, has had some other arm issues in the past, has been treated with kid gloves in the past. It's really hard to say, okay, yeah, you're right. That's definitely what happened. But he was pretty articulate about describing it. I'm not giving it justice by him to his press conference, but yeah, there's a lot here. I'm struggling to find the right question for you here, but I want you to comment on this situation, please.
I got to be honest with you, Jeff. I kind of just gave the whole thing a pass. Idea that changing, you know, having to grip the ball harder might actually hurt your elbow. To me, it was a young guy having a great year, who is now being told that, hey, you might be out for a long time. I understand he was very articulate in the conversation. And I think his main point, which is that changing these rules in the middle of the season is a problem. That he's right about. And they'll be jumping at the end of May, the beginning of June, and saying, oh, we're now going to enforce this rule we weren't enforcing for, you know, 1,000 years. No, that's a really bad process. And I think we need to call MLB to task for that. But as far as the making the direct connection between not using grip enhancers and hurting your elbow, I like to say, at worst, it's a post hoc error by Tyler Glasnow. At best, it's a young guy, emotional, frustrated, possibly seeing his season go down the drain, possibly heading for, you know, missing a year and a half with surgery and rehab. So I don't want to put too much weight on what he said the other night. If it turns out, you know, if we have a series of injuries that seem to be caused by the lack of grip enhancers, I think we can have that conversation. But I really kind of just gave Glasnow a pass for being a frustrated, talented young guy who's seeing his career possibly being altered.
Yeah, for sure. And it's just now we see DeGrom today. You know, it's like who's tomorrow? What's the next shoe to drop? It's just that's the thing that's frustrating. And we haven't even gotten to the performance changes yet. You know, we're all watching the spin rate drops and all that. We, you know, watching every Trevor Bauer start, watching every Garrett Cole start. Cole's going right now against the Jays. He's down 2-1 actually in the seventh. And he hasn't been striking out as many guys. Now, some of this is he's facing the Blue Jays, a really good team, a good lineup. But the spin rate is down again. I saw screenshots from this from Brian Hoke, among other people tonight while watching the games.
Do we care? I'm asking this seriously. Like,
yeah.
Like spin rate is something that, you know, we can track now and we know, and analytically we know that it has an effect on the effectiveness, both of fastballs and breaking pitches. But at the end of the day, we care about outputs. If spin rate goes down, but strikeout rate drops 0.5%, 1%. So now we're at the strikeout rate of 2 years ago. Is that really changing what we're getting? If that comes hand in hand with a jump in walk rate, are we really improving the watchability of the game? I think that's where I see this going, Jeff. I think there's still going to be the lack of action that we have. It's just going to be shaped a little bit differently. Particularly, there's a lot of question right now. Are pitchers going to take off some velocity for control and command, and possibly we'll get more hittable pitches? Or are they going to do the same thing they always do and just walk even more guys or hit even more guys, you know, which doesn't seem possible this year? I'm leaning towards the second of those because I think it's very hard for guys to throttle back. I think you'll see them use pitch much the same way they have been and sacrifice command in the process. But in either case, spin rate is just an input. What we care about is fans. And forget guys like you and me who talk about it and write about it all the time. But if you're, you know, Joe baseball fan who goes to a game at homestand and watches the home team play 60 games a year on his TV, what you care about are batting average and slugging and what happens on a ball in play and what the strikeout rate is. So I'm still a lot more focused on the output numbers than on the inputs.
Yeah. For sure. And I get you on that. But I do care because of the outputs. I care because I have Garrett Cole in like the NFBC main event and I'm watching him start tonight. And I want to make sure he's doing well. Now that I don't have Trevor Bauer anywhere. I actually shied away from Trevor Bauer a little bit. Because remember, MLB had that directive. They sent out that, I think it got leaked. I'm not sure it was leaked or actually leaked. But, you know, at the end of spring training, I'd say maybe a week and a half before the season started, saying they are going to be observing that. They're going to watch spin rates. We're going to take a sample of baseballs. So that their argument could be is, hey, we told you this is coming. Now, that's different than actually having penalties behind it. Announcing that midseason, I have a problem with that. But MLB's kind of also said, you know, it has shown in the last year and a half, they're willing to change a lot of things on the fly.
Well, the argument they can make is that this rule has been on the books for 100 years. I mean, literally.
That's true. Yeah, Chris Welsh was talking about that on the Reds broadcast the other day.
And he's, in addition to being a great broadcaster, he's got a great website that covers like the rules and weird things that happens in the rules. Baseball Rules Academy. People want to check that out.
Right, and you can follow him on Twitter at ThinkPitch. He's really good, solid. Nice guy, too. Very nice guy.
To kind of circle back here, though, this is an enforcement of a rule in place. The parallel I think we've all been using here is to steroids, where MLB just kind of ignored the thing that was going on for a long time. And then Snap decided, oh, let's make this an issue. And, you know, for guys like me who can't really get away from the labor elements of it, it's hard to not see this in here too. And I don't want to derail us here today, but I want to make
No, you can, because I'm going to also, so go ahead.
I don't think you can separate this coming up, the MLB's insistence on doing this in the middle of the season from, hey, it's an opportunity to divide the players, much as they did 20 years ago. It's dividing the players in advance of a collective bargaining negotiation, which was, you know, 2001 to 2002. And kind of this, as I've written before, you know, the drop in offense in April and May was really about the performance of the baseball as opposed to a big increase in strikeout rate or a fall off. The walk rate was actually up. So it's one thing to say, well, they should enforce the rules, but I don't think you can divorce that from the larger context in which we're playing here.
Yeah, I think that's true. Now, you were at my wedding 2002. I remember this one vividly. This was also the actual day of the wedding was also the day when the collective bargaining agreement deadline for negotiations, the strike deadline or play stoppage deadline was that day. I remember players getting booed in the ball, the fans turning on the players, how steroids was turned into this, you know, an issue that became a negotiating issue, a leverage issue. I see this the same way a little bit. They're painting the pitchers as the villains. Oh, those cheating pitchers, you know, putting these substances on the ball. It's gone too far. We know it's been a historical part of the game, but now it's weaponized. They use stuff like that. Look what's coming up here. You know, organizations have been teaching pitchers. You need to do this if you want to advance. Zach Gallen had a quote today calling out Michael Hill, saying, you know, hey, you told us we need to do this. And now you're going to crack down on that? It's interesting to see, you know, this pushback. Now, we'll see. Typically, does the public buy that or do they buy what MLB is selling them? All I have to do is look at the talks last year and when to start the season and how to start the season and know which way this is going to go.
the last 50 years of coverage of labor management relationships in baseball. I will say that I think it's better than it's ever been before, to the extent that it's not, even if it's not great, I think something like Zach Gallen calling out the commissioner's office will get more play. Something like the actual data about the baseball will get more play. There are a lot of really good writers out there. I think the volume of good content out there is more than it was 20 years ago.
100% agree. Well, it's a generational shift.
No question about it. No question that it's younger writers who come into it with a certain attitude again, but they've been reading, you know, the generation that came before and us old people. So I think that's influenced the coverage as well. So, you know, we'll have to see how this plays out over the next year, of course, with the negotiations coming up. But in this moment, I think we're seeing more pushback on the narrative than we would have 15 or 20 years ago.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, the funny thing, too, is like, you look at Gallen's hometown, Zach Buchanan, Nick Pecoro, those are two super smart writers, really solid guys. Steve Gilbert, too, for MLB.com, also a really good writer. That market is served very well, you know, at least on the written word side of the equation, at least. And Mike Farren does. I like Mike Farren, too, from the radio side of things. It's kind of fun to see this. All right, let's talk some actual baseball on the field here. Let's talk. Yankees just tied it up again. Or actually, they just go ahead. They just went ahead. Two-run homer by Gary Sanchez against the Jays. It's now 3-2. He's on fire. This wasn't even the bullpen horror show that it's been for the Blue Jays lately. It's actually, this was off Stripling, the starter, who's actually been pretty good lately. Yankees, though, they have not been swinging the bats. Gary Sanchez is waking up finally. You know, they've had some injuries, their share of injuries, but Gleyber Torres is just a shell of his former self so far. DJ LeMahieu has done some very hard regressing to the mean this year. I think a lot of people might have called that one, but even though he re-signed with the Yankees, still, it was a pretty good regression. What do you see going for this Yankee franchise going forward?
I'm curious as to how they're going to be affected by all the stuff we're talking about. If you think about a team that was hurt by the new baseball, the Yankees' whole offensive idea is hit the ball hard and up. And that's harder to get productivity out of. The fall off from Voit to Rougned Odor is awful. The fall off from Aaron Hicks to Brett Gardner and sometimes Aaron Judge in center field, both offensively and defensively, is a mess. So, and of course, you know, Judge has been out at times. Stanton's been out. It's just a team that's been exposed a lot this year. I think they'll be better offensively. I actually wrote at the RotoWire column today that, you know, they've scored on this road trip. They scored at least 5 runs in 5 of the 6 contests. I expected them to hit well tonight. They did not, although they're still going. But no, I think the offense is not going to be the problem. I think the pitching depth is where they're possibly going to be exposed in the 6th and 7th innings, in the 4th and 5th rotation spots. I think they will hit as the year goes on. They'll get Voit back here soon enough. They'll probably be in the market for a short-term bat, certainly in the outfield. They have depth prospects they can use to do that. We know the Yankees can afford the financial price for a rental. I don't think they can get Ketel Marte. I just don't think they have the prospect depth for it. But, you know, second and third tier guys, I think, will help. So I don't think they can catch the Rays. I think you're looking at one of the two AL wildcard teams regardless.
And that's a huge disappointment considering the expectations going into the season. I'll be the first to take the L from Sint Frazier, not Clint, because I took his L already. I thought he was going to – yeah, I know, terrible. I know, and you're like, where is he going with this one? You and I are in labor together, and I took him in the 10th round. And, or maybe it was the 11th round, but it doesn't sound – maybe it sounds infinitesimally better that I took him in the 11th than the 10th, but it's still bad. I expected him to be in the middle of that lineup after he was last year, and he hasn't. It doesn't matter where in the lineup he's doing because he's awful and he's losing playing time too.
To Miguel Andujar, who basically has a hit since his rookie season and is doing on-the-job training in left field. I'm shocked that the way this has gone. But again, the Yankees have given him a fairly reasonable stretch of playing time here, and he just didn't hit. And it's one thing if you're hitting. It's one thing if you've got 7 lineup spots that are producing, but when you're not scoring runs, it increases the pressure on guys who are maybe marginal, who are options to play. So, and Andujar can't go back to third. I mean, the defensive difference between him and Urshela is probably on the order of 3 wins a season. So this is left field. It's going to have to happen for him. So yeah, Frazier gets squeezed out there. You never know with the Yankees, somebody gets hurt all the time. So if we're Stanton to go down again, we're DJLM to go down. I mean, you might see Frazier get that other opportunity.
Yeah, maybe so. But he and Torres are the two biggest disappointments in my book. Yeah. What's up with Gleyber Torres? Can we expect a bounce back from him?
I think this shock for me is I thought he would hit for average but not power. And, of course, that big year he had was really more power-based. Can the Yankees schedule the Orioles 42, 43 times a year? Is that something they can work on?
Yeah.
Failing that, I mean, the approach has been a mess. The lack of, like, strong contact numbers are really driving me, because I thought of nothing else. I thought the floor for Torres at this point might be, you know, a 230 hitter with power, kind of, you know, Rougned Odor special. And it hasn't worked out at all. So I think you've got to stick with him, especially at shortstop, because Yankees just don't really have other options. And that's one of the problems the Yankees have right now. There's no upper level depth. This is a team that pulled a Luke Voit, pulled a Gio Urshela, has turned Kyle Higashioka into a pretty good player. But they're
Talkman
kind of
was good for a long time, too.
And I talked about Frulli for one of the various Peraltas. That's going to bug me for a while. But yeah, I mean, Mike Ford hasn't worked out. There's just that magic that they had for a couple of years there hasn't really paid off for them. So they're going to have to go outside the organization. But you can't go get a shot. I mean, you've got to basically, you know, on some level, you are what you are. You can fill in around the margins. The Yankees don't have the kind of prospect depth that the Rays, the Dodgers, the Padres do, where they can go out and get that superstar at the deadline. I don't think they're going to trade Jason Dominguez. I mean, if they are, then I'm wrong. But unless you're going to put a guy like that in the market, you're talking about filling in around the edges. So Torres is your shortstop.
Right. And the other problem with Torres is he's really not that good of a really not that good of a shortstop defensively.
No. So he's not bringing you the D. I mean, you know, if he was a plus defender, you say, okay, this is a bad D.D. Gregorius season. At least you're getting that from him. And I was wrong about him too. I thought he would be a credible shortstop. I did not expect him to struggle as much defensively. So, you know, it's really a problem we solved in the offseason. This is one of the reasons I didn't want to sign DJLM. I wanted to just go a year, you know, patch shortstop with one of the Simmons who was out there. Galvis was out there, maybe not him, but D.D. was out there. Patch shortstop for a year with that, and then go into this year's market with Correa, Baez, Story, et cetera.
Semien. Just think Semien, if they went for Semien.
That's a big swing right now between these two teams. You're talking about, what, a 2-3 win swing already this year? Semien's been fantastic. So he's actually going to be back on the market next year as well. So you'll have options next offseason. And I think that you look at the Yankees now, do you start to look at LeMahieu as kind of a Chris Taylor type? And I know, remember, that contract was kind of strange in that it was 6 for $90. He's only getting $15 million a year. It's not like he's getting paid so much that you've got to turn him into your everyday X. Do you sign a shortstop, move Torres to second, and now LeMahieu is playing 5 to 6 days a week at four positions? You know, you got Voit, you got Urshela. I really think the Yankees are going to have to get into that market next year, because it's just not – it's a good team. It's not a great team. And they need to go out and find that five-win player. Yeah. Maybe I just like Carlos Correa too much.
Yeah, as a Reds fan, I'm acutely aware of what the shortstop options were offseason and what they will be next year too. Although I think they might try to solve that internally, we'll see. But you know, with their prospect that's in Double A that just changed his name,
Garcia.
It used to be Garcia, now it is. And bear with me, I'll have that for you in a second. But
did this just happen?
Yeah, in honor of his mother who passed away to COVID, Jose Barrero. Now is his last name. So, but yeah, I don't, and knowing even the Reds, they're not going to spend the money. I mean, this is a team that said, here, take Raisel Iglesias, our closer. We won't miss him in the bullpen. Oh, and while we're at it, Archie Bradley, thanks for coming over, but we're going to let you go too for nothing. And in fact, we're not even going to offer you a contract. Just go. We don't want you. Now, I'm getting bitter about my Reds.
No,
fan.
I like
even though
this.
They're playing
I like
well.
Bitter Reds fan, Jeff. I love this.
But they don't deserve – I mean, they deserve bitterness from how they treated this offseason. The way they're playing right now is actually fun. And said bullpen has actually been good in the last week.
I was going to say, it's the best week this bullpen's had. Even if they lose Antone, and then the guys who've been getting battered from pillar to post actually pitching well for a week.
Sims is fine. He was always fine. He had two bad outings, basically.
But I mean, I looked up, and Heath Hembree was closing.
Didn't
they just claim him off waivers?
But that's the Reds' way. They're finding these guys. But this is also a David Bell feature in a way, too, because, you know, he loves to mix and, you know, he likes to do the whole high leverage reliever thing, but he does it kind of wrong, I think. You know, it does in the middle of the fifth and sixth inning sometimes. And I know a reliever's role is to get outs, right? But there is a rhythm to getting ready. There is a routine they go through. And, you know, he does this kind of willy-nilly. He does a lot of the fifth and sixth inning double switches. I'm just like, he's overmanaging, I think.
Yeah, I saw Sims come into a game in the fifth, maybe a week ago, and
it didn't work. It was bad. It was a bad outing. It was in relief of Castillo over the weekend, I think, or maybe no, against Milwaukee last week. It was, and that, you know, Castillo pitched well, deserved better. It was like a Thursday getaway day game. I didn't get to watch it. That was when I was on vacation. So boo-hoo, poor me. But at the same time, it's just, I've seen it a lot of times this year, and I know why Iglesias pushed back against that when he was the closer with the Reds too. And to his credit, Bell relented and treated Iglesias more as a closer last year, and it kind of worked out. You have to have full buy-in, and you also have to have some touch to it. So, you know, I think there's, it's a delegate thing. So we'll see.
You're the host, but let me, because we've been talking about this on the newsletter Slack, Josh Hader, who is essentially, seems to have kind of demanded that he be used in that hothouse flower way. I do think it can screw up your bullpen because you're best with it. And remember, with the trade of FireEisen and the other guy, I'm going to forget, you know, they've lost some depth in that bullpen behind Williams. Yeah. And they really could use Hader in, like, there was a game the other night. He threw 16 pitches in the ninth and then came out of the game in the 10th when there was a runner on second and nobody out. Like, that's the higher leverage situation. And
you wrote about this last year, right? I remember how they treated Williams against the Cardinals at the very end of the season, how they treated Williams and Hader and how they didn't use him enough.
Right. And I think that, you know, again, you want to, it's a personnel, it's a people management thing. You mentioned, you know, with the Glazers, you want to get buy-in. We already know Hader can be used this way. I'm not saying abuse him, but you've got to be able to get two innings out of your best reliever sometimes. It can't be you're only going to use this guy for 15 pitches, you know, in that rigid closer situation. You don't have, enough relievers to do that with. I don't think the Brewers have enough relievers to turn Josh Hader into that guy. He's the guy that came to mind. She mentioned Iglesias last year kind of using that role. And it's like, how do you find that balance between managing the player? Because Hader, I think, has now come out and said, you know, he really wants to be used in that role. Well, that's nice, but you would also like to be used in the last week of October, right?
For sure. And to his credit, he's actually thrown more innings this year. He's thrown 27 and two-thirds innings already. So he's on pace for good almost 80 inning season, I think.
Last I checked, it was literally all one inning roles.
Yeah, it is. 28 games, 27 and two-thirds. I mean, I understand what you're saying with the multi-inning roles too. And that could be, and maybe later in the season they'll do that. He's also, you know, he also went through a stretch where he pitched 4 out of 5 days, but then before that pitch, like, it was off for 6 days. So yeah. I don't know. It's a little wild. And results have been amazing though, too. You know, 0.65 ERA, 0.76 WHIP. He does. He hasn't allowed a homer this year after allowing a bunch.
Finally, had to write twice a week. I could write a lot better than I do, man. Yeah. I want that Rick Riley gig where I only write like 50 columns a year.
Hey, you know, you're working for the wrong employer. You need to talk to your employer about that one there.
Hey, you're part of my employer right now.
That's true. And yeah, you are writing the gambling problem. And I loved how you're over on the Cleveland-Baltimore game hit really nice and early on that one.
Yeah, the way that's been going, an early win. By the way, I love the malaprop there. I'm writing the gambling problem.
Did I say that?
Yes, you did.
Column, not problem, but yeah.
Been a little bit of both.
Potato, potato. But there you go. Hey, this podcast is sponsored by WinBet, but we also insert a couple of ads here in the middle. If you're listening to us on the live stream, you won't hear them, but if you're on the podcast, you'll hear them right now.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And we're back. All right. That was quick and easy there. I'm Jeff Erickson here with Joe Sheehan from the Joe Sheehan newsletter. Joe, how can people get a hold of your newsletter?
Just check out joesheehan.com. In fact, the newsletter I sent out Tuesday night about Tyler Glasnow and his injury and the possible causes of it, I posted that for free at joesheehan.com. So you can get a sense of what I do. You can see excerpts from previous things. I usually put a piece of every column that I do up on the site at joesheehan.com. It is a subscription product. You can get pricing information as well. It's also a link on the webpage at joesheehan.com. Drop me an email. Let me know what you think. If you have any questions, I'm happy to send you a sample as well. So joesheehan.com. You can also check me out on Twitter at @Joe_Sheehan, at least for a little while longer.
He always threatened to quit golf, poker, and Twitter.
I've done two of those things, actually.
Yeah.
I haven't
not
golfed.
All,
I haven't
not golfed not always poker. The same time.
Yeah. No, but I haven't played golf or poker since well before the pandemic. I think I've played a handful of times, and I haven't played golf since the last time we played almost 3 years ago.
I mean, your clubs are still out here, right?
Yes, they are. I wasn't expecting
our
global
friend Dave pandemic. Donovan's place. Yeah.
So, yeah. But no, I actually have promised, I've pledged that if I get to certain subscription levels, I will leave Twitter.
All right. Wow. I took Twitter off during my vacation. I think I might have liked a couple of tweets. I did not tweet anything though. I tried to stay off it as much as I can, but every once in a while,
hair's growing back and you look 10 years younger. See?
Yeah. I do need a haircut. You're right. But, it's a little grayer now than it used to be, but that's okay. I'm officially 50 now, so I can do that. I'm allowed that. So, all right, let's keep moving here. So the Reds did sweep the Brewers. This isn't Reds talk. We'll move on to that. But the Brewers are really good at run prevention. They have this hideous lineup. I look at it all the time. And one of the big problems is Christian Yelich. You know, he's not the same guy he's been, but, this is 2 years running now. The strikeout rate is really high. That's the thing that really kind of caught my eye is last year he went from, 20%, 20%, 20% all of his career to 1 year and 2 months, 30%. And we're like, okay, was it just a 2 month sample? Was it the restart? I don't think so now. I mean, it's still there.
I just don't think he's physically right. And again, I'm giving everybody a pass for 2020, but remember, he came off the DL for one day, went back on. He's come back. I want to say he's a two homer since he came off the DL, but he's just not the same guy physically. And I think that's showing up both in the contact rate and what he gets when out of the contact when he hits. He's not the same guy defensively, too. If you watch him in the field, this is somebody who was a Gold Glove caliber outfielder. And he's just not that good. I guess I have to say Fielding Bible Award caliber outfielder now. We're all modern and statistical, but he's just not the same hitter. And you're right. When you take him out of that lineup, and, they're down Kane most of the time. And, I want to say today they had a first inning rally that ended with Jace Peterson batting with the bases loaded and two outs. And the problem with that is that Jace Peterson was batting sixth. So are you and me batting seventh and eighth in a lineup that is Jace Peterson batting sixth? There's just
Tim Lopes and David Robertson.
I mean, come on. It's really strange because this team a couple years ago had it all, right? They had the good offense. They didn't have the deep starting pitching, but they had that incredible first version of the council bullpen that was built around Hader. And it's a ridiculously bad offense at this point. Now, this is a team that's been aggressive in season under David Stearns. They've gone out a number of times and added. And I think you look at what they need. One of the things about when you're playing Jace Peterson and Tim Lopes is that you're a lot easier to upgrade. So if you're going from a replacement level player, if you bring in an average hitter, that's a one-win upgrade over the last third of the season. So I think this is a good situation to be in if you're Stearns. I will say, though, I don't think they can count on Kane and Yelich to combine for, I think there were, 11 wins combined a couple of years ago? I mean, if they get three out of them this year, I think they got to be happy because of all the physical problems both have had.
Yeah, and we haven't even mentioned Keston Hiura, who's now on a second demotion of the season. That's devastating. When you're counting on your big-time prospect, he makes his debut, and he's gone Brett Laurie on us. And, trust me, I had Brett Laurie on my watch. That one was one of Jeff's greatest hits in Tout Wars there. I think you were still in AL Tout Wars at that point in time.
That was a while ago. Our friend Keith Law, I was listening to his podcast through The Athletic recently, and he said, whoever did that to Keston Hiura's swing should be arrested. It's obviously a mechanical floor, but you look, maybe he can bounce back eventually. Lowry eventually, I think, had like one decent year, but it's a hard thing because either you got to plug him in and play every day, and first base is no longer available. Dan Vogelbach is pretty much taken that job. So you move here back to second. He's a pretty bad defensive second baseman.
And Colton Wong is normally really good there, and his Plankton, is pretty Plankton good Wong. On OBP
he's on
too.
He's on the DL, so
yeah,
I forgot about him. But yeah, it's just there might not be a place for you right now until next year right. when the DH shows up.
Yeah, yeah, and that's another fun story there. I'd really like to see that. Hey, we can change that midseason. Let's do that right now. If we can change other rules, let's just get the DH in so we don't get any more pitchers hurt hitting. But anyways,
fix the strike zone.
Yes, yes, right. That too.
Really, yeah, really.
I know. Yeah. All right. The Padres are in a bad way right now. Lost to the Rockies again today. They are not hitting. I mean, today wasn't really the offense, but it's Coors Field, so maybe it kind of was the offense. Yesterday they got four runs early and then couldn't hold on, and they didn't get any more runs after that. That was a problem for them. They were shut down big time until Sunday by the Mets. Tatis had a grand slam to kind of save at least part of that road trip, but they're not playing very well right now.
Now, this was my concern about them coming into the season, is that it was hard to find anybody from last year's team who you would expect to be actually better this year. And some guys have actually held on. I mean, Trent Grisham is a much better player than I expected him to be when he was coming through the Brewer system as Trent Clark. He's actually had a great follow-up year. Maybe not as valuable fantasy-wise, only just the 7 steals so far, but hitting for average, hitting for power. But, you know, Manny Machado hasn't followed up on a near MVP season. You know, Tatis has developed, but you know, Eric Hosmer's gone back to being Eric Hosmer. They're not getting production out of the catcher spot. It's just it's not the same offense as last year. And then, you know, they have 63 or 64 pitchers have gotten hurt for this team. It's one thing to have all these. You have the hitting regression has been matched by, you know, losing a lot of these pitchers, kind of having to fake it. Now you look at the trades they made in the offseason, and those have basically saved them. Darvish and Musgrove have saved this team this year. I don't want to talk about the left-hander who basically has blown up my entire AL tout, mixed labor team. I'm really angry at myself for that pick because I didn't want to take Snell there, and it was more like I need to take a starter because that's what you do. And Snell has just been absolutely hideous, pretty much except for that one start against the Mets.
Yeah, and he's got some pretty severe home road splits. That's also been an issue for him. And the funny thing is, too, is you mentioned Grisham. He's been hurt twice, including at the start of the season, and just came back from his heel injury. Heels have been, you know, him and Mike Moustakas had multiple setbacks with that heel injury. Moustakas had another one this week, won't be coming back this week as initially planned against said Padres. So I don't know. Heels are weird, I guess. Achilles had one, and it's been a problem for him all along. Look at this division, the Giants. I knew they were improved last year and then faded hard at the end. I like their front office, smart front office. I'm really surprised they're this good, though.
They seem to have that little major league level of magic where they can take mediocre players. We talked about the Rays doing this, the Dodgers, the Yankees to some extent, and they're just getting good performances out of them. The thing of that is they're doing it on the pitching side as well. They finally unlocked Kevin Gausman with the Orioles, the Braves, and what was the other team he played for?
Pipe down, Joe. Just look at look at the entirety of their rotation. It's not just Gausman. It's Cueto, former Red. Desclafani, former Red. Alex Wood, former Red. of various stripes. Now, Gausman, I think, and they non-tendered Gausman too, by the way. That was pretty cool. I thought that there might have been a benign explanation for them, but Clay Link's like, no, we non-tendered him. So it's like, great. That's awesome. Fun times. Yeah, I've
written them off twice. I want to say I wrote about him in early May and then again right around Memorial Day. And both times I was like, they can't keep this up. They're keeping it up. And at some point, you are what the standings say you are. I don't know that they're going to fall fast and hard enough to actually be sellers. And that's what I thought they would do, because all those pitchers you just mentioned are free agents at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. I think the only guy in their rotation right now that is on their roster for next year is Logan Webb. So maybe it becomes the 77 White Sox where you just say, you know what? This is the team we have. Let's just try to fill it out as best we can.
We've been waiting for this sell-off for 5 years with the Giants.
Well, three anyway. I mean, I thought Zaidi would trade away Madison Bumgarner a couple of years ago. And they had that really – they had like that 10-of-11 stretch right before the trade deadline.
Of course.
That talked them into staying. And then they, you know, went 20-40 the rest of the way. I think that is absolutely in play for this team. You know, the injury – they've been hit with some injuries. They're an older team that's going to be hit with injuries. But – I mean, you can't, if you're within a game of first place on July 15th, you can't turn around. And I mean, there's a word for teams like that. I mean, you can't start dumping. So, you know, the one thing I'll say is that when the Luciano Ramos Bailey version of this team is in place, you're going to this skill that they've shown at identifying low value talent, essentially free talent, and bringing it in and making it better is going to be a huge part of the game. Because if you look at the best teams in baseball now, yes, they go out, they have those that clutch of 20 WAR, a group of guys producing 24 WAR for no money. But they're also finding the Taylors and the Voits and guys like that. So the Giants really seem to have that skill under, you know, I mentioned Zaidi, but I know a lot of people still don't think Gabe Kapler is a good manager, and that's got to change.
Well, I don't know about Kapler anymore. I mean, it was easy to mock him in Philly, and I still maybe I'm concerned about some things he does with the Giants, but I can't say he's made a lot of like glaring mistakes. I haven't seen like, oh, what's he doing? Whereas other teams, I frequently see that or think I see that. But yeah, I don't know. I'm willing to give him a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt before. You know, than I did before, but you're right though. They're going to be in an interesting stretch here. They don't have anybody, you know, it's not true. They have one person that still could be get the Madison Bumgarner honorarium treatment. That's Buster Posey. That you could say, well, he deserves to finish out here in San Francisco, sort of thing. But he's actually good right now. I mean, that's the tricky part with Posey.
Well, I didn't think they could trade Posey or Crawford for those reasons. I mean, as the prospect we might get. For and rentals don't bring back anything now. I did this research.
No, I saw that article from you too.
So, in the news and granted, Posey and Crawford have played absolutely out of their minds this year, but they're rentals. You're just not going to get a ton for them. Posey is one of those two is a 10-5 guy. The other one he's either just about to be or just misses. But Posey, I think, has a no trade. So essentially, you've got to go to them and say, do you want to leave? And if the Giants are contending in any way, I don't think either one of those guys. You know what you don't want to do is trade them against their will. You don't want to say we're trading you anyway. You don't want to put them under that. What team traded McGriff to the Cubs? Or was it when the Cubs wanted to trade McGriff and McGriff said I don't want to go and that turned into a whole thing? It's one thing to do it with Fred McGriff who doesn't have a long history with your franchise.
Right.
The Giants don't want to get into a public, can I say pissing? Well, I just did. Match with Posey and Crawford. So
no, I agree. And I think they can read the room pretty well on that too. And the thing is, it's not just that Posey's been good. He's been phenomenal. Right. You know, 940 OPS from a catcher batting third in the line.
Every player should take a year off at the end of their careers.
Apparently, especially if you're a catcher.
Right. I mean, Salvador Perez, I think, would benefit from the short season last year. I go back to Dave Winfield, who missed a year with back surgery. Back 1989, I think he missed. And he came back in 90 and he almost won the batting title. I mean, there's something to these guys' bodies, just getting that full reset. I think we're seeing it with Sutton. It's strange to talk about pitcher health given the year that we're having. But when you look at some of the guys who are having good years and some of the performances, I think some of it is just only having to throw 50, 60, 70 innings last year. It was like a half year off for a lot of these guys.
Yeah, I think there's some to that there. Maybe everybody should have get your owner suspended by getting blackmailed by a gambler sort of thing too. With Winfield.
Highly recommended, especially Steinbrenner ruined my childhood. So I still remember the night the suspension was announced. And I mean, this wasn't everybody having a phone back then. I don't remember how it got announced at the stadium, but there was a standing ovation.
Yeah,
at Yankee Stadium the night he got. I'll never forget it. It was, and then 4 years later they won a World Series.
Ding dong, the witch is dead. But you know, force them to do the right thing with their prospects. So at least that's the narrative. I don't know.
No, it absolutely helped having him not around as Jeter and Williams and those guys were developing. Posada, Gene Michael put a heck of a team on the field.
And, he did.
You know, it's almost forgotten because Cashman's been there for so long now. But those early teams were Gene Michael and Bob Watson and guys like that. I'm gonna forget the kind of just resigning grace. It was the resigned in disgrace. I can't remember the name. There was another executive from that period who was a key member of that front office. So I guess the trick is to get Castellini to get mad at one of his players and pay a guy for dirt on him. And that's how the Reds will get back to the World Series.
Yeah. Except I don't know. I won't get cynical about that. Maybe that is the way to go. Ready to take some questions?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Bibat Juice says, Anthony Rendon and Bellinger, chances to produce ADP-level stats the second half of the year. Both are dealing with nagging injuries. Bellinger's on the IL. Rendon is not with his triceps, but he also didn't play today. Bellinger has one homer so far and is dealing with a hamstring injury. Let's start with Cody Bellinger. You know, he's had three different things now. The shoulder, which he had surgically repaired. He had the freak injury where he had it turned out to be a hairline fracture in his bone in his leg, and now the hamstring injury. It's a lot to deal with.
Our friend Will Carroll will talk about cascade injuries. Guy hurts one thing, he starts favoring it and hurts the other. I'm bitter about Bellinger because I think I correctly read that he would be fine by opening day because of the shoulder. And that is actually what happened. I took him with the 12th pick in tout in labor. I keep saying tout. And of course, you know, the other injuries that have come along. I think you've got to, at this point, assume degradation of performance because the power just hasn't been there when he's played and limited performance. So I don't think he'll get anywhere near ADP. You know, I took him at 112 or whatever his ADP was, you know, 16, 17. I don't think you can count on him for anything like that, especially because the Dodgers, because of their depth, even let's say poof, Bellinger's back on the roster and he stays there the rest of the year. I think they're going to manage him carefully. I think he's going to be a 4 to 5 day a week player as opposed to a true full-time hitter.
Yeah, I think that might be true. And the thing is, he hasn't even played enough for you to even consider trying to sell him. You know, even if you, you just can't do it. So that's really tough. By the way, I'll say the news after this, but the second part of the question, Anthony Rendon also has been hurt. This is his third time getting hurt this year. Also, really tough when you're already a top-heavy franchise like the Angels are. You just don't have those depth players, which is the story of the franchise every single year under the Artie Moreno reign, it seems like. But four homers, hitting .241 so far, .314 OBP, .365 slugging. And it's hard to get going when you've been hurt so much. But at the same time, this is not what you're paying for. What do you expect out of Anthony Rendon the second half of the season?
I'm a little more confident. The Angels desperately need him. So when he gets healthy, he'll be back in the lineup. Remember the 2019 season, he missed time at the start of that season. That was when the Nationals started 19-31. And then he basically played every inning the rest of the way. So he's somebody that, you know, he's either in the lineup or he's not. There's not a lot of that in and out issues that I project that we'll see with Bellinger once Rendon is back. And I still trust the bat. It's funny because when Rendon was drafted, the reason he slipped to six when he had 1-1 talent was because he was fragile at LSU. He just didn't. LSU, Rice, one of those two. And he just didn't stay in the lineup. And we almost forgot about that because he's become this fairly durable player in the middle of his career. And this is more the player that, you know, we kind of projected him to be. But, and again, what was Rendon? At the turn, at the 2-3 turn in most drafts?
Yeah, maybe a little later because he doesn't run.
That's right.
And, but it depends. Like a 15-teamer, I'd say like early third, middle third, and a 12 or a little bit later.
I could actually see him producing that kind of value. I'm a lot more confident in him, certainly, than Bellinger.
Okay. Very good. Guilds, who is winning one of my two NFBC main event leagues right now, I'm in second behind him. I wish he'd be less proficient at baseball right now, but he's a really good player. But he asked, if you had to pick one, peak Pedro or peak Jacob DeGrom?
I wrote this, actually, earlier this year. Until an hour ago, I thought DeGrom was kind of getting into that conversation of who is the best I've ever seen. And now I think you've got to just say, hey, look, the volume is just not there. Pedro Martinez doing what he did in the year 2000, one of the greatest hitting seasons in baseball history.
Yes.
In Fenway freaking Park. I mean, you talk about, you know, define peak, right? Is it your best start? Best two starts, that's Johnny Vandermeer. You know, best half season. You got a lot of candidates for that. But it's Pedro or DeGrom, I think, for the best stretch. But Pedro's going to even – remember, we talked about Pedro being fragile. I mean, he had a year in there where he only made 14 starts. He didn't qualify for the ERA title. DeGrom was somebody who I thought – because was one of these guys who, because he had the short season last year, I thought that was one of the reasons he came out this year and was averaging 99 with the fastball. I thought that really helped him. But I just on volume, I've got to go with Pedro. And run environment. It's a pretty significant difference in the run environment. Fenway in 2000.
Yes, it is.
And City in 2021.
Yeah. Did you do any of the retro drafts that we did last year before baseball sports resumed at all?
I didn't. Ron actually invited me. Ron Chandler, the great Ron Chandler from Baseball HQ. He invited me into one, and I really got a lot of enjoyment out of following them online. I think I even dropped into one that you invited me into just to watch and kind of see the names. But as far as actually prepping for it, and I just, it wasn't something that I wanted to do. I think it was during that time in the pandemic where I just was kind of getting away from baseball. But no, they seem like a lot of fun.
It was amazing, but we did a 99 one there, and that was kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so after the 99 season, there's 2000, or maybe it was after 2000, and an AL labor, John Hunt, you know, who was the man in fantasy baseball. I mean, in fantasy baseball advice. Oh, I'm not. I never was. Never at this level. But John Hunt, Baseball Weekly. And this is Matt Weekly publication, people, that you held in your hands. He wrote the fantasy column. He put us on the map. You know, he's the guy that made Roto News bigger than it could have been. And like, well, he definitely shortened our ramp quite a bit, made us big by just screenshotting us a few times. Anyhow, his whole thing was he was never a big spender in auctions. He would never go more than 30, 35, never 40. He went 50 on Pedro after this big year. I mean, that was like, whoa.
He was on a different planet. He really was.
Yeah. It really was. And then he was obviously the number one overall pick in that crazy offensive season. You get your Pedro, and then you can kind of figure out what you want to do, how to do your build after that. But it's pretty wild. It's a good question there. MLB moving averages goes two-parter. Wants to know, has Joe ever filled that six-figure assistant job? Talk to your management there about that one there. But more importantly, given the ball changes, what are you looking for most in determining which pitchers can stick rest of the season?
Shouldn't Legueza be working on his own podcast right now? The first is a reference to a tweet that was a little too dry and made a joke that a lot of people took seriously. The second was, I'm sorry, what does he want to do with the baseball?
He goes, given the changes, what are you looking for in determining which pitchers can stick the rest of the season? Which ones are you most confident in performing well?
I'm not making any changes. I'm literally not.
I'm
evaluating the pitchers based on the information we have to date. And this is just not a factor. In fact, I mentioned this in the gambling column a couple of times. I don't think there's actionable information. And I think there's going to be in time to actually use it this season. And then we'll see what the rule set is for next year. I could be wrong about that. I could be minimizing this problem. But when I look at all of the factors that go into the increased strikeout rate, the increased walk rate now, the lack of performance on contact, I think I've said this in a few places. I think the effect of the sticky stuff is maybe 1 to 2 points of WOBA around the league. Now there's going to be variance to that, but I think it's basically worth 1 to 2 points of WOBA, maybe 1 point of strikeout rate. This isn't going to radically change the game. Again, maybe I'm wrong about this, but that's how I'm looking at this as we go into these changes.
Do you want it to be a radical difference?
Yeah, because if this is the thing that actually is the difference between an 18% strikeout rate and a 24% strikeout rate, great. That's great. Congratulations to MLB, and they should have probably done it sooner. I can't see how this is the only, this is the biggest part of it. I think the biggest part of it is just the pitchers are that much better, and they're closing the gap between 66 and the plate, you know, better than ever before. I think the question I try to get at is, what would make this a success? Like, how far does strikeout rate have to drop without a concomitant rise in walk rate? And how much better does the game have to look for this to be considered an actual success? Because this isn't a cost-free decision by MLB. They've turned their season into this. We've got the spin rate doctors, you know, looking at it throughout the entire, every single start now is, oh, this guy's spin rate went down. And it's, oh my God, the discourse. What has to happen for this to have been a net positive for baseball?
That's a good question. And I think it's going to be interpreted differently. Some people are going to say, well, I think it's, you know, rise in homers or this, then they won't focus on the strikeout rate. But then we got the strike zone issue. We still have that as a problem. Are you pro robot umpires?
For at least 8 years now. I forget what I wrote for SI, but
leading question for 1,000, Alex. Yeah.
Look, as I say, if you want to say the robot umps aren't perfect, that's great. But every night I see a major league umpire call a ball a strike that's 3 inches, 4 inches off the side of the plate. And they're doing it in big
and vice versa too, by the way, sometimes.
Less so, yeah. They do miss in the
strike. With the top ends of the strike zone, right. I think.
I just think you're measuring you're judging the robots on a scale that you're not judging the humans on. There's a site now, Umpire Scorecard. that breaks down umpire performance every day. And it's just, you look at these, the map, the graphs they show you, and you're seeing pitches way out here off screen. Like I'm rubbing Jeff's head. That's getting called a strike.
And stop touching me.
We've got to get that out of the game. And I've been a big believer in, if you fix the strike zone largely through automation, that would actually have a big effect on playability. Because right now, a pitcher gets up 0-1, and the next five pitches are out of the zone. One gets fouled off, two get called balls, one gets, it's slowed down the game. I know a lot of people are happy with pitch framing being a thing, but calling pitches off the plate strikes based on what the catcher has done has slowed down the game as much as anything. I want to take that element out of the game. And that, I think, would improve offense. It would improve contact rate. It would improve watchability.
Yeah, I think so too. And I know the argument is like, well, what if catchers figure out how to, trip the robot umpire a little bit? Well, don't they do that with real life umpires anyhow with framing?
Exactly. Right back where we started.
Yeah. And it's probably worse with them. But then it would be with robot umpire. So yeah, I'm pro robot umpire when it comes to balls and strikes at the very least, maybe more. My dear friend, former roommate Mark McCann tweets at us. I knew him, college fraternity brother and all that. And I know he's a subscriber of yours and has interacted with you before. He goes, would Joe be interested in interviewing Rob Manfred? Is there any chance Manfred would take the interview? I think we can easily snap call, say no on the second question. But, or for me or anybody else, he doesn't take interviews. That's part of the issue.
Coming up recently, yeah.
Yeah. I think it was, who was the Yankees beat writer who was talking about that? I forget her name.
Lindsay Adler.
Thank you. Very good on Twitter. But she made that point pretty apparent. But if you had the chance, would you take it? Would you want to interview him?
Oh, sure. I mean, I don't report just as a matter of course. When I started doing this in 95 and 96 with Prospectus, we couldn't get access. I mean, it was largely just this. I kind of carved out this informed outsider position because, well, that's what I could do. I still remember fighting to get access to a winter meetings in the 2000s. Yeah. So, I look at the writers that have come since. I look at what, Eno does. I look at what Trent Rosecrans does. And he's, obviously a reporter to begin with, but the combination now of analysis and access is phenomenal.
It is.
And if I was 10 years younger, maybe I would have done that. Would I sit with an interview for Rob Manfred? Absolutely. I think it'd be a fascinating conversation. I think I'd probably be more inclined to just do an off the record conversation, because doing an interview and putting it in the newsletter or selling it to a magazine, folks, magazines are these things that used to be made out of paper and glossy, and you would open them.
Still do one every year.
I write for it. It's true.
Yeah.
When I think about talking to Rob Manfred, I want to have this is how you fix the game conversation, as opposed to the, let me ask you this and report on it. I'm much more interested in what could come of that conversation, as opposed to just a feather in my cap. Oh, I interviewed the commissioner. I'd probably, talking about another interview I can't get, I'd be probably more interested in doing an interview with Butt Seelig than I would with Rob Manfred. But I'd be shot on sight. So.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I don't know. By the way, Gerrit Cole just went 8 innings tonight. He's leaving with the 3-2 lead. Well, he just
finished. His career isn't over?
No, it isn't. His career was over. Believe it or not. I know. It's crazy. Crazy. Huge outing for him. Yeah. Okay. Good question, Mark. Yeah. And I would too. He asked if I would. Yes, of course I would. I'll say this. Interaction. Twitter is, I think, I like Twitter. The interaction with writers and, fans and, I'm somewhere, I don't know where I fit on that spectrum, but the access to writers that do have access and the interaction with someone, it's been fantastic. There's a lot of good interaction. A lot of smart writers out there that, we always like to say the media doesn't do their job. Well, baseball Twitter, baseball media on Twitter is actually pretty good.
I think the fantasy community on Twitter is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of on the outside of that to some extent. But when you think about not just the talk and the baseball stuff that goes around, but also, the things that some of them do. Think about Justin Mason. Think about Scott Fish. I mean, these guys are all out there doing good in the world.
That's right.
Certainly more than I am. So I think fantasy Twitter and baseball Twitter are two separate things. But you mentioned, the access to writers that surely you and I growing up never would have had. I can... I mean, I can email Peter Gammons, but like, you know, I can say something on Twitter and Peter Gammons will comment on it. And look, I just turned 50 and Peter Gammons reading anything I write is still a thrill. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Same here.
And, you know, this guy's like, you know, Stark and Rosenthal, who are just, you know, really good guys doing their job, and Jeff Passan, and that Adler chick, she's, no, I'm kidding. Lindsay Adler's phenomenal, but,
yes,
and the Beast as well. The information you get from beat writers is incredible. You mentioned the Arizona guys. We've mentioned C. Trent Rosecrans on this. And it's just, I feel like we mentioned a lot of athletic guys because that's what The Athletic does, guys and men and women, I should say. But yeah, the access to that is something that certainly changed over the 30 years we've been doing this.
For sure. And way for the better. So, all right. I promised this at the beginning of the podcast. Need your golf picks, your golf bets here. Okay. What do you got going for the U.S. Open?
You know, I went with in our, I guess I can say this, on our one and done, I went with John Rahm. I was basically saving him for this event. So, you know, I didn't get burned having him a couple of weeks ago when he was forced to withdraw. I'm going to be doing a lot of this research tonight. So unfortunately, I don't have great answers for you. This is actually, typically I do my golf stuff, whether it's our league or picks or whatever, overnight on Wednesday. And I can actually even wait till the morning because the West Coast event.
That's right.
But, you know, if I had to pick some, you know, I want to say, you know, Thomas Detry last winter after the pandemic had a really nice run in Europe, and he's the kind of guy I think could go into Torrey and have some good rounds. Talking about guys that are like way off the radar. I mean, yeah, the standard for that's pretty high. Stuart Sinks won two tournaments this year, so you got to come right, pretty far off the radar atop that. I will say this: I will fade every share of Phil you have. There's a lot of people. I want to say I saw earlier today that one of the sports books has their largest liability on Phil Mickelson. And I sure. give me Phil to miss the cut.
He's very public. I mean, he is the face of the public, basically. He is like, you know, when Mayweather fought, what's his name? The MMA guy, Colin McGregor. And all these bets were on McGregor, but these huge bets were being placed on Mayweather, you know, and just because they knew this was like, this is
right. Cause the sharps were getting free money at whatever it was, you know, 1 to 12 or whatever they ended up right, getting off. Cause you know, the average guy doesn't want to go in and bet, you know, $120 to win 10, but the sharps will take it cause it's free money. And it was in that case. And it's not a whole lot of free money out there. Fading me at RotoWire. It's been free money.
There you go. But is it reliable fade? That's the question.
No, let's hope not.
All right, this has been a lot of fun. I want to thank Joe for coming on. Really appreciate you. And this will be on the podcast for everybody starting on Thursday morning. It should be hitting like all your favorite places to hit that. But hey, thanks for spending an hour with me. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me, man. Take care.
All right. Thanks, everybody. And thanks to WynnBET for sponsoring us. We will be on Friday with the Two Star Stars with Clay and Todd. And I'll be back again with Scott on Monday morning. Take care.